Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Never Dead by M. L. Bullock, narrated by Suzanne Elise Freeman. 1. Tamara. The aroma of French roast coffee summoned me to the kitchen earlier than I'd planned. Luckily for me, Chloe could make her own breakfast and see herself off to school. I'd had every intention of sleeping until 8. But I was a sucker for a good cup of coffee, and I couldn't help myself. I wouldn't accomplish anything hanging out in my comfy, albeit sometimes lonely, bed. The bed was new, even if I couldn't say that for the rest of the furniture in the big old house. It was our house, though, and come hell or high water, I was going to keep it for Chloe. I had promised her mom. What was my plan after? I couldn't really say. I've always been one to wander, to check out the next town and get the vibe. Strangely enough, this crumbling plantation felt like home. Maybe I was just getting old, I groaned inwardly. Shut up, Tamara. Coffee. Go get coffee. Slipping on my fuzzy pink slippers, I tried to arrange a messy bun as I stumbled down the hall to the kitchen to fetch that first cup. It would be the first of many, I predicted. Late nights watching Ghost Hunters with Joey were beginning to take a toll on me. The episodes were all reruns, but I liked watching them because Joey enjoyed them so much. Watching the shows made me nostalgic for the old days. Chloe's mom and I used to be into all that stuff. It was our practice to tour haunted locations with paranormal groups between gigs. I was more into the paranormal than she had been, but we had both been huge ghost fangirls. To think she'd owned a haunted house all that time and never told me. Best friend my ass. I would never understand, but it was water under the bridge now. The shock had worn off a bit of me being a proxy mom. Who'd have thunk it? But if it hadn't been for those excursions, I wouldn't have been prepared for what was happening here at Ridout Plantation. From day one, we had weird encounters, but Joey, the resident ghost, was harmless if a bit dramatic at times. We'd gotten along almost right away, but Chloe had a cool disdain for him. Exhausted the first night, I'd tossed sofa cushions on the floor and made a pallet for myself to collapse on after a day of moving. I woke up to the sound of someone rummaging through my hanging clothes. The first few seconds of our encounter had terrified me, but Joey's relaxed demeanor quickly put me at ease. I went back to sleep and woke up believing it was all a dream. Nope. He rearranged my vanity table and my shoe rack a few days later. Joey slipped into Chloe's room once to help her get organized, but the teenager let him know quick, fast, and in a hurry it wasn't cool, a rule I adhered to as well. I'd taken a day off from the usual hustle and grind of trying to sell houses to a disinterested local marketplace. I didn't have any connections in the cliquey town, and the locals were suspicious of anyone they didn't know. They sure as hell didn't know me, but I could be charming when I wanted to. I was about to unleash the magic and pour it out in barrels if necessary. I'd be sweeter than syrup if it meant gaining the trust of a few influential neighbors. Sure, that cop, Deputy Kevin, whatever his last name was, didn't trust me, but he was a red-blooded American male. Roll through one stop sign and you're considered a criminal, apparently. He'd change his mind eventually. I could still rock a pair of high heels. I yawned and stretched my back as I continued the long walk to the kitchen. Yep, I had to break into this local market, and sooner rather than later if I wanted to keep the lights on. I wasn't one for rustic living. That was the whole reason for hosting a Halloween party. From a marketing standpoint, it seemed a great idea. I'd even gotten Chloe on board with it. Opening the Ridout Plantation to the community and letting them get a peek inside would be an excellent way for the local folks to get to know me. The historic home had been closed for a long time, and people were naturally curious about it. It couldn't hurt, could it? They didn't have to know everything about me. If things didn't improve soon, financially speaking, I'd have to get a second gig. But doing what, I had no idea. I'd kind of aged out on the whole burlesque deal. Clubs didn't want to bring in 30-year-old performers when they had a constant stream of fresher, aka younger, acts to choose from. I could always hit the webcam highway. Get over it, girl. You had your time in the limelight. You can do this without all that. I rubbed my eyes and refused to look at my reflection in the dirty hallway mirror. It would be great if my book actually took off. That was the plan. Finish the book, and maybe sell a few houses along the way. At least one, damn it. Today would get me one step closer to what I wanted. I was setting up my writing space. No more crummy desk in the corner of the bedroom. If I was going to take a real stab at becoming the next Anne Rice, I'd need to have a dedicated office. I'd already picked out which room I wanted to use, and even the paint color for the walls. I could hear Chloe's phone dinging away in the kitchen. I grunted as I joined her. She was pouring herself a to-go cup of coffee and loading it with sugar and milk. See, Tina Louise? See how great I am at this whole parenting thing? I've taught your daughter how to make the breakfast of champions, caffeinated sugar juice, I thought. You're welcome. There was no need to flick on the light because the kitchen had no curtains. I'd removed the broken blinds the first week we got here and hadn't replaced them yet. From my perfect view of the side yard, I could see gray, leafless trees and an overgrown lawn. Was it possible we'd been here a month already? My, how time flies. Sunlight streamed in over the sink and reminded me the dingy floors needed mopping. Not today, Satan. I'm not mopping floors today. This is my day. Chloe didn't bother saying good morning. Instead, she handed me a coffee cup and jerked her head toward the stove. Why does the ghost have his head in the oven? I groaned at the sight of Joey's bony ass sticking out of the appliance. He hadn't even opened the door. Morning to you too, Chloe. Why don't you ask him yourself? I just got here. I shrugged as I pondered the same thing. Whenever Joey got flustered about something, he forgot he could open doors and move things around. When he was happy, he walked around just like Chloe and me. Whatever was going on with him definitely had him stressed out if he had his head in the oven. No thanks, I'm not the ghost whisperer. I'll leave that to you, but remind him my room is off limits. I'll know if he goes snooping around in there. I've got my breakfast, and my ride is on his way. I think I'll wait for him outside, she said as her blue-painted fingernails tapped on her phone screen. Nobody wants to see this. Or you. You look like hell, Tam. Please ask the ghost to wait until I'm gone to kill himself from now on. I ignored her request. You're not taking the bus? She'd been having some trouble on there, and I hated to hear it had gotten so bad she didn't want to ride it anymore. Bus kids suck. I'm tired of hearing their smart comments about me living in a haunted house, and all the other stuff they say. She sipped her coffee and avoided eye contact. She'd been doing that a lot lately. We had moments when we connected, or so I thought, but not recently. Don't make a big deal about it, Tamara. Oh. So it's about me. Trey is picking me up. The kid from the video game store? That's cool. Wait, here's some money. I stepped over Joey's ghostly behind, still poking out of the closed oven. He was talking to himself like he was trying to muster the courage to actually do the deed. Whatever the deed was, you could never tell with Joey. I dug through my purse and grabbed my Hello Kitty pouch, quickly found a few wrinkled dollars and shoved them in her hand. What do I need money for? Gas. We pay our own way around here. With money. Nothing else. I smiled and pretended this was natural. Joey's ridiculous position, her taking alternative transportation to school, my everything. This was life now. I felt sorry that her new family wasn't normal. She didn't refuse the cash. I imagined, and it probably was my imagination, that she smiled back momentarily. Thanks. I'll see you later. Later, I answered as she left the house. The screen door made a slapping sound behind her. I turned my attention to Joey as I poured black coffee into my favorite Hello Kitty mug. What exactly are you doing? You heard her, he answered, his voice reverberating in the closed oven door. I'm going to end it all. I'm killing myself. Goodbye, cruel world. Now stand back so you don't get hurt. He gasped and took a deep breath, and then a few more. Where's the... It's not going to work. Don't try and talk me out of it, he panted breathlessly. He was inhaling and exhaling like a crazy person. A crazy dead person. That's an electric oven, Joey. So? Joey snapped as he arched his back deeper and wiggled his behind a little as he breathed in deeply again. I shook my head as I dumped 3 teaspoons of sugar in my coffee cup and sat down at the rickety kitchen table. The worst you could do would be to roast yourself to death. That sounds long and painful, and I'm sure that's not what you want. That's not a gas oven, Joey. You can keep your head in there until the cows come home, and it won't make a difference. And there's one more thing, I said as he pulled his head out of the oven and gave me a dirty look. What's that? I hate stating the obvious again, but you leave me no choice. You're already dead, Joey. You want to talk about it, or am I supposed to guess? I can't help you if you aren't honest with me. You heard that man last night. Death is merely a perception, he answered as he got up and dusted himself off. It was a weird thing to watch because everything he dusted, like the hem of his shirt or the top of his pants, got a little blurry like he was made of chalk or something. He did look a little faded this morning. Apparently, late-night binge-watching paranormal shows wasn't good for dead folks either. Something clearly had Joey vexed. I couldn't for the life of me figure it out with no information. He'd been fine when I went to bed. I'd even left the television on for him. It's too early for guessing games, and I'm tired. Some of us didn't get our full 8 hours of sleep. Living people need rest, you know, I complained as I sat cross-legged in the chair and waited for my coffee to cool. I can see that. What's this? Joey asked as he hover sat in the chair beside me. He was thumping his fingers between his eyes. This? Are those wrinkles? No, I told him defiantly. I rubbed the space between my eyes and frowned at him. I slept hard is all. Give me a break, Joey, or I'm going to stick my head in the oven. Oh, that's not making it better. You should probably stop. Better hit that concealer, Tam. At least I'll never have wrinkles. He shivered as if just the thought of getting older gave him the willies. I hate you right now. I flipped him off to add extra meaning to my statement. You know who else has wrinkles? A matching coffee cup manifested in front of him. I don't have wrinkles. I'm not there yet. I attempted to sip my coffee and avoided making eye contact with my ghostly best friend. Oh, you're such a bad liar, sweetie. Such a bad liar. Frowning? Like this? He said as he waved his nearly translucent hand over my face. Makes those lines deeper. I see what you did there, I remarked before taking a sip of coffee. Turning this around on me isn't going to distract me. We were talking about you slowly roasting yourself in the electric oven, remember? Maybe we should call Dr. Phil. God forbid. His bald head would be too much of a distraction. I took a big swig before continuing. Jason's bald, and you love him. Jason? Joey answered coyly. Yeah, Jason, your favorite ghost hunter. Oh, He's not my favorite. We sipped our coffee in silence. I wondered why he wanted to kill himself, and if that was how he'd died. What do they call those eye wrinkles? Crow's feet? Before I could think of a witty comeback, his face suddenly went blank. Uh-oh. Uh-oh, what? I rubbed my forehead again. Was I growing a horn or something? You've got company, sweetie. Later. You might want to pass by a mirror before you open the front door. What? Joey vanished in a tiny puff of smoke, and I was left alone in my kitchen. I got up from the table just in time to hear heavy knocking at the front door. Great. I was a wrinkled train wreck, and I had a visitor. Just a minute, I called, knowing good and well my visitor couldn't hear me. The front door was too far from the kitchen. Shoot. I left my cup behind and raced toward the bedroom to find a pair of shorts. I'm coming, I yelled as I hopped down the hall to greet my guest. Could it be the mailman? He didn't usually come this early, and didn't typically knock. Yes? I asked as I swung open the large wooden door. Deputy Kevin Patrick was standing on my front porch, and, naturally, he looked like he'd stepped out of GQ magazine, Law Enforcement Edition. Damn, did I have a warrant or something? Miss Garvey, did I wake you up? No sense denying it when I looked like an unmade bed. May I help you, officer? My sarcasm wasn't wasted on him. Deputy, not officer. I would think you would know that by now. What is this, our third encounter? Encounter? Jeez. Did he think I was afraid of him? That Tamara Garvey was going to shake like a virgin on prom night at the mere sight of a cop standing on her porch? From his sullen expression, it was clear I was never going to live the stop sign incident down. Or the disturbance call from the grocery store. Have one argument with the cashier about accepting a check and they call the law on you. The good deputy acted like I was a habitual offender. I've lost count. What can I help you with, deputy?
Just a welfare check. We got a call about a woman screaming. Are you okay? What about Chloe? Anyone else in the house?
I rubbed my eyes and considered inviting him in, but decided against it. I didn't like the idea of Deputy Patrick having me at a disadvantage. I always got the feeling he wanted to slap those handcuffs on me, and not in a good way. I think someone is pranking you, Deputy. I've been here all morning. I didn't hear anyone screaming, and Chloe has left for school. I saw her 5 minutes ago. She barely said goodbye when she left. I frowned at him. He raised his hand and radioed into his dispatcher.
Resident says no. Are you sure it was coming from the Ridout place?
Caller says yes. Suddenly, both of us heard it. A loud scream filled the air. It was coming from upstairs. 2. Annie Hensley, 1987. My white leather shoes made unsettling sticky noises as I traveled across the bare floor. There was a run in my tights, and my arms were freezing. One of the disadvantages of wearing white to work every day was collecting stains. I would undoubtedly collect a few here if I continued on my search. I usually wore a cardigan when I went out, but I'd left my sweater at the nurse's station. I was nowhere near the senior home, but instead I'd broken into the deserted Ridout plantation in search of Marjorie Banks, my favorite but recently most demanding resident. Going back without Marjorie wasn't an option, and I had an inkling she might be here. Marjorie couldn't drive, and she was barely mobile some days. Even walking had been a challenge lately, but this house cast a spell on sweet Marjorie. I heard other footsteps walking across the gritty floor. Maybe Marjorie had found her way over here. It had been her singular purpose for longer than I could remember. I'd always wanted to visit the deserted plantation, just for curiosity's sake, but this wasn't the way I imagined I'd take my maiden voyage. There was no way Marjorie could be hiding here. How could an elderly woman cross acres of forested land and break into a boarded-up house? Okay, it hadn't been boarded up. The door had opened quite easily, but there was no way Marjorie could have traveled over hills and through woods by herself. She could barely find her way to the cafeteria on her good days. I should have done as Marjorie asked and brought her here so she could see the place again one last time. Maybe then she would have let it go. Marjorie had been obsessed with the Ridout family, as many people were in this neck of the woods. She was a Crystal Springs native and knew the grease on everyone from back in the day. It was heartbreaking to witness her deterioration. I whispered into the husk of a home, "Marjorie, it's me, Annie. You're not in trouble, but I need you to come out, sweetie." I glanced at my watch. Nearly 5 o'clock. It would be dark soon. I'd stumbled on this job after my failed relationship with Harry. Harry moved on in that big truck of his, the one I helped finance, but I didn't have the luxury of pouting about it. I had bills to pay and a life to live, and it didn't take long for me to fall in love with a few residents, including Marjorie. She used to tell me stories about the goings-on here. She was like family to me, the only family I had left. Like many people at the home, Marjorie was losing her grip on reality. The disease was wreaking havoc on her memory and her vocal cords. She couldn't express how she felt, but I knew about her fixation on the Ridout plantation from before her diagnosis. We'd sit in the solarium together, and once in a while, she would say things like, "Did you see that, Annie? Do you see the lady in the window?" I would always say no, but in the back of my mind, I sometimes wondered if maybe Marjorie saw something I couldn't. Fringe magazines like the ones Harry used to read mentioned this sort of thing. One article said quite plainly that people with her type of disease develop other abilities as a kind of compensation. It wasn't a scientific diagnosis, but it brought me comfort. I wanted to believe she was in that dainty head of hers, somewhere. "Marjorie? Marjorie, hun?" I whispered cautiously as I rubbed my arms, trying to warm them up. "Marjorie, it's time to go home. Please come out." As I walked through the rooms, I realized how incredible a feat it would be for someone as frail as Marjorie to have made this journey by herself. Most of the time, she got about in a wheelchair I had to push, but sometimes she used a walker. There were rare days when she was very mobile and spirited and nonverbal. Her fixation with this house never wavered. I never liked the look of this place. She'd sit in the solarium and stare, even though the view was obscured by dark green cedar trees and various and sundry other foliage. Marjorie would watch it as if it were the most interesting television program she'd ever seen. Now that she couldn't speak or verbalize what it was she saw, I worried about Marjorie and her continuing fascination with the Ridout plantation. I'd even made a call to her daughter, but she had not returned it. Nobody cared about Marjorie, except me. I stood in the center of the largest room, the floor beneath me black and white tiles, like an old-fashioned checkerboard. I didn't much care for the feeling in this room with its empty alcoves and bookshelves. They made it feel even more foreboding. Every step I took felt as if someone watched every move I made. "Marjorie, come out, please. We have to go home. It's getting late, and your daughter is going to be worried about you." I lied, but I was desperate. The only answer was the faint sound of footsteps. I couldn't tell if they were made by a human or an animal. I paced across the room as I tried to locate the source. Then there was crying. Now, that was a cry I recognized. She was here. Marjorie was here at the Ridout plantation. Was she behind me? I retraced my steps back through the rooms I'd just passed through.
There were a few scant pieces of furniture and no curtains to hide behind.
Marjorie, where are you?
I listened as I prayed I would hear another clue. She had to be in trouble. She might be injured in some fashion. Suddenly, I was cloaked in shadow, and there was nowhere to run.
3. Tamara.
Another scream echoed off the side of the porch, not as powerful or as loud as the one from upstairs. I felt like a cat caught between two rocking chairs. My neighbor, who I had only met on two previous occasions, zipped up the stairs toward us. She was sporting bright pink capris, a sleeveless shirt, and a visor, the kind you'd wear golfing or fishing. According to her equally bright pink tennis shoes, she'd been out walking.
I heard the screams. Are you all right? Is it Chloe? Where's the ambulance?
We're fine, I said, wondering what the heck was going on. Who was screaming upstairs? Joey? He wouldn't dare do that to me.
You ladies stay here.
The deputy raced into the house, practically shoving me to the floor as he ran to assess the situation. He cleared the foyer and bounded up the stairs in a matter of seconds. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Joey hanging out in the hallway. He'd tucked a few pink curlers in his short hair and still held a coffee cup in his hand. This ain't the time, Joey. You better not have anything to do with this. If he could hear my mental message, he didn't let on. I don't know why he would. We didn't talk telepathically, or whatever you'd call that. Joey peeked up the stairs and then shrugged to show me he had no idea what was happening. I couldn't help but shrug back to show him I had no idea either. Linda, the neighbor, didn't seem to notice the exchange.
We better stay down here, Tammy. That scream sounds like someone is being tortured. Oh, God, it's terrible. I swan, it does sound like someone is dying.
It's not Tammy. It's Tamara. Why don't you stay here? This is my house, and I'm going upstairs with the deputy. I'm sure others are coming. Why don't you keep an eye out for them?
Linda gasped in shock. You can't go up there. Didn't you hear those screams? I'm surprised the whole town didn't hear them. It sounds like someone is getting murdered.
She shook her head and added in a whisper,
I wouldn't doubt it in this house, and it wouldn't be the first time.
No one is getting murdered. I'm sure there's some explanation for all this. Just stay here. Joey sipped from his ghostly cup of coffee and watched our exchange with some amusement. I tied my robe tightly around my waist and jogged up the first flight of stairs. As I cleared the first landing, Linda called from the porch,
Is it safe?
No, it's not. Stay there, Linda. The last thing I needed was her footsteps stomping up behind me. My nerves were stretched like the strings of a guitar, an old guitar with even older strings. The hair on my neck was standing on end, and my stomach rumbled hungrily. But I didn't hear a thing upstairs.
Officer? I mean, deputy? I whispered as I began climbing up the second flight of stairs.
The treads were warped, and it probably wasn't safe to be moving too quickly.
Hey, can you hear me?
I hear you. In here.
Deputy Patrick's voice echoed from one of the empty rooms down the hall on the left side. There were 6 rooms on the left and 6 on the right. As I started toward the sound of his voice, I felt a man's hand touch my elbow.
Holy hell!
I screamed as I turned to see Deputy Patrick glaring down at me.
What are you doing up here?
I thought you were down the hall. Weren't you?
I asked you to stay downstairs.
The dark-haired law enforcement officer shoved his gun in his holster.
I didn't find anything on this floor. Do you have a key to the attic? It's locked. That's the only room I haven't cleared. I snatched my arm away from him.
I was never given a key to the attic. I was told it was lost. I've got to have it rekeyed. Feel free to break it down if you feel you need to. Or maybe you could just blow a hole in it. I didn't mean to sound so testy, but I was on edge.
I heard a voice coming from that room. A man's voice, not a woman's.
What the hell is going on?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?